but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
They're excellent on script, and that's credit to offensive coordinator Will Stein.
Back shoulder throw, more catch, more reaches. Touchdown, Oregon.
It's a beautiful thing for this team.
For end zone city, touchdown, Ducks.
Talk about a beautiful pass. That was one right there. Pressure coming. Moore feels it. End zone, touchdown, Ducks. Jeremiah McClellan finds the end zone the first time. Moore to pass. Moore going deep. He's got Bryant. Gary Bryant, end zone. Touchdown, Ducks.
How long are you and the team going to enjoy this win before flipping the switch to Penn State? Is it right now? Is it tomorrow morning?
Yeah, switch is already flipped.
The switch is already flipped, said Dan Lanning in the post-game news conference. Still some stuff to clean up as it pertains to the Civil War football game. I'd love to hear from you. I want your reaction. What did you leave Saturday thinking about? That rivalry game was alive for about a quarter, wasn't it? About a quarter. And then it died a slow death at Autzen Stadium on the turf there. 503-417-7575. You tell me. This rivalry game, did it leave a sour taste in your mouth? Did you enjoy it at all? Did you see the fans? I saw empty seats at Autzen Stadium. I've never seen that before in a Civil War game. But you tell me. 503-417-7575. And as you turn the page to Penn State, if you're Oregon, what are your expectations for this whiteout game? A lot of pressure on Penn State, I think. Oregon playing with a little house money or no? Untested Oregon against untested Penn State in what will be a huge football game on Saturday. For people who are interested in seeing that game, you're going to be able to watch it. I'll be there in person. I'll have you covered, of course, right here on this radio show and on social media and at johncanzano.com. But we're going to talk all week about this whiteout game. Got big guests all week that are lined up, including Dan Lanning, who will join us, I believe, on Wednesday or Thursday's show. Not sure which, probably Thursday's show. We'll also check in with the crew at Penn State. What will a whiteout be like? We will get some flavor from State College PA. 503-417-7575. What did you make of this Civil War football game? If you're an Oregon State fan, probably felt okay for about a quarter. It was 7-7. In fact, I joked with both Jerry Allen and Mike Parker, the broadcasters for the Ducks and the Beavers, at halftime. I said, look, Oregon State led 7-7 at the end of the first quarter. Because that's what it felt like, didn't it? Like, Oregon State was in the game, played a good quarter, had run the ball a little bit, and I thought, you know, maybe Oregon is a little bit sleepy here, and Oregon State is, playing, running around, flying around a little bit, and then lo and behold, the NIL-induced coma set in as Oregon's payroll and its roster and its players just started making plays, and Oregon State could not keep up with it. I don't know if the backbreaker was like the 80-yard scoring drive before the end of half that made it 21-7, or if it was the fake punt in the third quarter, but somewhere in there, Oregon State's back broke. Trent Bray moving on to Houston. He had some thoughts about playing Houston. You heard Dan Lanning talk about Penn State. Here's where the Beavers' mind are.
Yeah, another talented team, Houston, explosive offensively. Defense throw a lot at you. They do a nice job. It'll be another great challenge for us.
Another great challenge. Trent Bray's team, I thought, played okay. At least they snapped the football. They didn't look completely lost, unprepared. Hard to tell against an Oregon team that is just that much better talent-wise. But, I was left thinking a lot about Trent Bray after the Civil War game. Jonathan Smith was 2-10 in his first year. He's 5-7 in his second year. I'm wondering if Bray can can match those two-year totals. It took Jonathan four seasons before he had a winning season at Oregon State, but you could see the trajectory of the program, and the team looked prepared. They were just overmatched in a lot of cases. This Oregon State team, hard to tell. I did look at strength of schedule nationally this morning just to see where Oregon State was. Oregon State has the number two schedule in America. The team right behind them is Notre Dame. Two spots behind them is Florida. Oregon State has played a Cal team that, you know, is decent until it ran into San Diego State. Fresno State's 4-1 somehow. Luckiest team in America, maybe. Most fortunate. You look at Texas Tech. Texas Tech had laid it on Utah over the weekend. Texas Tech's 4-0. And then Oregon 4-0. I mean, the combined record of the teams that Oregon State has played is 15-2. That gives them the number two strength of schedule in America. This has not been easy. As Scott Barnes said on the show last week, he said, hey, that Trenton didn't do that. I did the schedule. I think he's being very forgiving. He's trying to be a leader there. But, you know, if the team hadn't looked unprepared, it hadn't given away that win against Fresno State week two, I'd feel differently. But a little bit of pressure on Trent Bray here as he prepares for a Houston team that is coming to Research Stadium on Friday night. And, yeah, Beaver fan, I'd love to hear from you as well what your level of confidence is in Trent Bray. But I want phone calls. Phone lines are jammed up. Let's do this. 503-417-7575. Let's go right to Roy in Portland. Roy, you got a big one this week, too, Alabama, Georgia.
Hey, John. You know, we're not worried about Alabama, man. This is going to be the end of Kalen DeBoer coming up. The Alabama fans are going to have a fit after we put this whipping on them. So we definitely not worried about them. So
it was just It was just 2 weeks ago where you said it's not our year. It's not our year. But you're back, aren't you?
Yeah, we're back because after I saw that Tennessee, I think Tennessee is better than Alabama. And we at home, so I think it's the end of Alabama. It's the end of Alabama this weekend.
Okay.
They're not coming. They're not coming in. They're not coming to Athens and beating us.
I agree.
Not that team.
I agree.
So, but I want to say the Oregon State, man.
Yeah, let's talk about it. Should they play? Should they play anymore?
I think they have to play. You got to play because that's the Civil War. No matter what, you got to play that game. You got to play Washington State. Yeah. It's just bad because Oregon State, you see some, I think it's empty seats in the stadium because it's not the same, you know, they're not in the same conference anymore.
No.
It's not a Pac-12 rivalry. So it's just like it loses some of its juice. You know what I mean? It's just like.
And you're playing in week four, too early in the season, sunshine out. Yeah. You know, it's not late in the year with bowl game stakes or playoff stakes. It's, you know, that game happened later in the year. I appreciate that phone call. He's eager to see Georgia, Alabama. I love that. He's back. But the Georgia, Alabama game taking a little bit of a back seat to this Penn State, Oregon game. I want more phone calls. 503-417-7575. Bruce is in Portland. Bruce, welcome to the show.
John, hey, how are you?
Doing well.
Civil War definitely should continue to be played. I'm glad it's got an off year next year. Give Oregon State a chance to rebound.
Yes.
I mean, OSU is obviously not on the same level right now. Malik Murphy played pretty well. He just needs guys around him, you know, and I think they probably need to distribute some of that NIL money that he's getting to some of the other players to try and lure some guys in. I'm a little worried about Oregon's starts the last two games, you know, against Northwestern, and then obviously this last weekend against Oregon State. Their D just is kind of slow to get going, in my opinion, and they're not going to be able to afford to do that next week at Penn State. They got to show up and be ready to play from this opening kick. Because Penn State, you know, they're hungry after last year's Big Ten loss to us, and they've got a lot of guys coming back. There were quite a few fans there. The highway was definitely packed driving to and from Portland. I think the state of Oregon still embraces the Civil War, or whatever we're going to call it. They call it the rivalry game now, but I'm always going to call it
the Civil War. It's the Civil War. It's the Civil War. These guys are my seat in the press box, not that far away from Jerry Allen. I heard Jerry Allen a couple of times slipped up and called it the Civil War. I like that. Don Essig, the voice of Autzen Stadium, talked to him at halftime. He called it the Civil War. Everybody calls it the Civil War. At some point, the presidents of these two schools are going to talk to their Civil War historians that are their professors on their own campuses who are going to say, hey, the Civil War was about a lot of things, but the Civil War was not a war that was deemed to perpetuate slavery. In fact, President Lincoln emancipated slaves during the middle of the Civil War, and you know, maybe as a strategy to beef up his army, but he did it. And the Civil War historians on both sides at both campuses, I've emailed with both, and they've both all told me it's ridiculous that you could view the Civil War in a negative light. And by the way, we all know that the terminology is Civil War. There's lots of different Civil Wars that have been fought. We're not really even talking about the American Civil War here. We're talking about two teams that don't like each other in a rivalry game. You know, like, thank goodness the Apple Cup, the apple farmers are not upset about the Apple Cup being, a game fought to determine which apple is the greatest apple in the state of Washington. It's, some of this stuff is just ridiculous. But, yes, look, Oregon State's light years away from Oregon when it comes to talent, NIL, revenue sharing. I don't know if Oregon State closes that gap in 5 years, 7 years, 100 years. We don't know. But I think something's going to happen in college football 5 or 6 years from now that is going to, you know, change the shape, change the landscape. So if you're Oregon State, the next 5 years is all about strategy. It's all about trying to stay relevant, trying to win games, trying to announce to America, hey, if you break off the top 60 teams in college football, we should be included. If you break off the top 48, we should be included. Boise State's making the same argument. San Diego State's making the same argument. So are all the schools in the American. They're all trying to say, hey, we belong, we belong, we belong. And so I think Oregon State should continue to play the Civil War, but get back to me in 5 years. If it's lopsided, lopsided, if this perpetuates and becomes just the new norm that Oregon State beats Oregon, Oregon State loses to Oregon by, 35 points every game, I think you have to start to ask yourself, should this continue to be played? How much longer should Oregon State allow the series to go forward if the outcomes are so lopsided? Because there's a payday benefit here, and there's a perception benefit to playing this game every other year in your own stadium. But there's also some damage to your brand if you're getting run off the field each time. So I think there's, this to me is like a five-year thing and then evaluate. But I heard from quite a few Oregon State fans after the loss who said, hey, I don't want to see this again. Let's go to the phones. Cam's in Eugene. That opens the line at 503-417-7575. Cam, go ahead.
Hey, John. Thanks for taking the call. Observation for each of the teams from this last weekend. I really liked the Shoe Duck uniforms and the tribute that Oregon did. And I always loved the way that we look in all black. I think those uniforms year to year look very sharp. I didn't like the timing, especially with the problems Oregon State is going through. It felt like kind of poor sportsmanship. It was almost like, hey, Uncle Phil, thanks so much for the money. Boy, if it wasn't for you, we'd be like those schmucks over there on the other side of the field, poor guys. I just think we could have done that any other weekend. Turning to the Beavs, you're right. And I thought it was interesting you brought it up right before you took the call. You said the Beavers are fighting for relevance. They're trying to be a part of that top 60, and the light's starting to go out. It's looking grim. It's looking Anderson grim. A couple of weeks ago, I called in, and I had this pithy little slogan where I said, it's time for Coach Bray to go. It's time for Riley 3.0. That's the safe play. But sometimes desperate times call for desperate measures. And I'm not saying this is advisable. I'm mostly saying this to get your reaction and to spark the idea. And anybody over in Corvallis who might be listening, just because I think it's good conversation fodder. Not saying it's a great idea, but there is a head coach out there who would agree tomorrow for a very reasonable, dare I say, bargain price, and he's got a Super Bowl ring. What about John Gruden? Corvallis. Is it time to make a big play? Oh, it's loaded with controversy.
It would
but
be.
Again, it's... somebody is going to break that glass case.
Is UCLA going to break it first? Is UCLA going to go after Gruden? Like, I kind of wonder. I think Gruden's got to go and coach on an SEC team and be an analyst. He's got to go the Nick Rolovich path. I think, if you're Oregon State now, it's not the worst play. I mean, you've seen schools in similar predicaments take flyers on coaches. But John Gruden to Oregon State, we'll see. Also, look, I think there's an element to this Trent Bray thing. To be fair to him, if they had played well, and they haven't, if they had looked organized, and they have not looked organized, if they had been able to snap the ball in a punt, and they haven't, I probably would feel a lot different about Trent Bray right now, even if he was 0-4 or 1-3. Because I didn't expect him to beat Oregon. I didn't expect him to beat Texas Tech. Now that I've seen Cal, I guess San Diego State can beat Cal. But the way Cal looked through 3 weeks, I was kind of looking at Cal going, that's not a bad team. And maybe Oregon State's not there right now in Trent Bray's second year. They're not there. Obviously, they're not there. But I think over the long haul, ESPN's bowl projection predictor machine is still projecting Oregon State to be 6-6. It sees the games with Lafayette and Sam Houston and Wake Forest and two games with Washington State and this game with Houston on Friday night. It sees those games coming, and it's going, those are wins. Now, Oregon State had to play this schedule. It had to piecemeal together an unfavorable schedule. It couldn't book a bunch of FCS teams at the beginning of the year. It couldn't have Sam Houston in week two, Lafayette in week three. Be a very different feel right now if Trent Bray were sitting at 3-1 with a loss to Oregon. But they had to play Cal. They had to play Fresno State. They had to play Texas Tech on the road. They had to play Oregon on the road. That's the number two schedule in America. I need to see more of Trent Bray before I write him off. I think it's pretty lazy for media members to sit back and go, this guy should go, he should be fired. You weren't here when Jonathan Smith went 2-10 and came on this radio show every week and had to say, oh, we're just trying to be competitive. We're just trying to get, it was a long year in talking to Jonathan Smith. And I can remember people going, oh, it's just more of the Gary Anderson. This is more of the same. And he got traction in that second year. They went 5-7. And then the third year they went, I think 2-5 or 2-4 in the pandemic, and then he broke through and he had a winning season. I think you got to give Trent Bray a little more time and a little more patience, and you have to understand that Oregon State is tremendously distracted behind the scenes trying to piece together a new conference. Doesn't make it any easier. Doesn't help with your frustration levels. Doesn't help when they're losing to Texas Tech and Oregon in consecutive weeks by, you know, a score of like 120 to you know, 14. That doesn't help. It doesn't feel good if you're an Oregon State fan. But there's some wins coming. And Friday night, what I want to see from Oregon State at home playing against Houston, that Houston team's not bad. They beat Colorado already, but they have not left home. They're going on the road here for the first time. They're going to play at Research Stadium. Oregon State should be in that game. Now, I don't know if they're going to win it. I wouldn't bet on them. I don't trust them. But they should be in that game. Let's see what happens. Let's go to the phone lines. Mike's in Eugene, listening on Fox Sports Eugene. Mike, welcome to the show.
John, been a long time. As a proud Duck, if the tables were turned, I would not want to see what we saw at Autzen. And to your point, they're not closing the gaps. The gap is going to grow wider. And if I was a Beaver fan and I saw Carol Folt in the airport, I would trip and pour something all over her expensive purse, because she played footsie with Fox and was the Jenga piece that moved the needle. They wanted to bring us, Fox, and USC's trying to get away from us, like always, because they can't win. So I felt horrible for what I saw, and it's an abomination. But they got to get some traction, because that earlier caller was right. They're not top 60 in America right now. And it's just so devastating to watch. Yeah. And they don't deserve it. And me, Duck, that we don't even – it's like – and I say this with respect. It's like beating a defenseless junior varsity. Dan Lanning could have scored 70 on Saturday, yep, if they wanted. And yeah, they were asleep in the first half. I bet they'll be ready to box on Saturday and a happy volley.
They better.
They better be. That's right.
Here's the thing. Yeah, go ahead, Mike. Look, here's the thing. If Oregon had played its best game and Dan Lanning had been angry at Oregon State, that could have been 72-7. Could have been 70-0. I thought Oregon State played a pretty good quarter, went about as good as the Beavers could have hoped for. I saw some of the Beavers administrators in the press box at the end of the first quarter, and they were walking around like, hey, this is way better than I thought it would be, because they were expecting like 21-0, you know, like they'd seen it. They saw it a week before against Texas Tech. How good is Oregon? That's a question, isn't it? And I would love to hear from Duck fans who have watched this team, you know, how good is Oregon? Because you're going on the road to Penn State. You're going to play in Beaver Stadium next week, and you're going to get a wholly different experience with this whiteout game. We'll play a clip from James Franklin a little bit later in the show talking about the whiteout, but this will be a hostile environment. It will be a tough game for Oregon. I don't know how good Penn State is either, because I was looking at the teams Penn State and Oregon both played. It's not great competition. I can't decide which schedule is softer. And they are untested, unproven. I don't know if Penn State is a top five team. I don't know if Oregon is a top six team. But that's what we have in the rankings here. I think they are. And I look back to last year's Big Ten championship game, and I have to think Penn State's going to be pissed. Like, Penn State felt like they were the better team. They turned the ball over twice. They outrushed Oregon. They outgained Oregon. James Franklin looked sick in the post game. He was, you know, the Oregon band was playing down the hallway. I was sitting in that post game news conference in Indianapolis. Franklin was annoyed. And he was like, hey, I'm not, you know, I don't like the setup here. It's a junior varsity setup, he said, because you could hear the Oregon band. And he was trying to do his news conference. He was totally irritated. 503-417-7575. I want to hear from you if you're listening on Fox Sports Eugene or on 750 The Game or on KSKR The Score or 960 Sports or 92.5 FM in Bend or 107.9 FM in Medford. And where are you, my Fox Sports Newport listeners? Can we get a call from Newport? 503-417-7575 is the number. More phone calls coming up after the break. I'd love to hear from you. What do you make of Oregon Penn State? What do you make of the Civil War? Your reaction? You got the BFT statewide on the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Network.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Tremendous challenge, tremendous opportunity. You know, obviously, we need this place rocking. Need to have a distinct home field advantage. We always do. But I'm expecting this to be an environment like no one has ever seen. Urban Meyer always has kind of discussions and debates on what's the hardest place to play in college football. I think he usually says, you know, between Penn State whiteout at night and LSU night game. So we want to make it clearly obvious to everybody what is the most challenging and difficult environment to play in all of sports, let alone college football. I know a good portion of our fans like to sit down, except for third downs and red zone and what they consider critical times of the game. But I'm challenging everybody. This is a four quarter, one play at a time, first, second down, third down, fourth down, punts, kickoff coverage, that we need to be on our feet screaming a collective battle cry in the stadium. So we're going to need everybody's help.
There's James Franklin, who does a really good job winning the games he should win. He wins when he's favored. He wins the games he should win. He has a much harder time when he plays opponents that have about the same or maybe a little better talent than he does. He doesn't tend to do well in those games, and he gets a lot of frustration from Penn State fans. And look, you can go to the Hall of Fame winning the games you should win if you're coaching at a school like Penn State, because you're going to be favored most of the time. You can go 10-2 a lot playing that kind of way if you're James Franklin. But he needs this one. It's why I think the pressure is on Penn State on Saturday at Beaver Stadium in State College, PA. I want your phone calls. How do you think Oregon fares in that game? 503-417-7575. Also, how do you think Oregon State should feel spinning out of that Civil War? Because there were some Beaver fans who were demoralized by what they saw, and others, I heard from others who said, hey, that wasn't bad. Look at that first quarter. That was progress. I think you're going to have to look in at Oregon State after about week 8 and then ask how they're feeling. But How do you leave the Civil War if you're a Beaver fan? Let's go to the phone lines. Mark is in Portland. He wants to weigh in. Mark, what do you think about this Penn State game?
I think, you know, this is the only game this year that Oregon's going to be the underdog. They're 3.5-point underdogs. And I think the last two games, if I had to base it on the last two games, I'm not very confident because we do look a little soft on the run, and you know Penn State's going to come at us with that. We're looking at a Oregon team that has not lost a Big Ten regular season game. We're looking at an Oregon team that beat Penn State for the Big Ten championship. So all that revenge factor stuff and the Big Ten tired of hearing about Oregon, you know, because they haven't lost a game yet. I think, you know, I circled this game as a loss, John. All the rest of the games Oregon has on their schedule. Here's my question to you guys. If we can look into the future and say that Oregon does lose this game and then runs the table and Penn State plays Ohio State for the Big Ten title and Oregon's a 5 seed, would you take that, or would you take last year going undefeated and you play in the Big Ten championship again? Because I'm all about the playoff. I don't think the conference championship means near as much now. I think it's all about getting to the playoff and playing your best football when you get there.
Yeah, I think you're right. You learned that last year. There's a little bit of an NFL feel right now to college football in that we all know, you know, like the Kansas City Chiefs can start 1-2. And we still, you know, you don't eliminate them from being a contender. You don't eliminate somebody who doesn't look good in the opener from being a contender. The Bills beat the Ravens in week 1. We didn't go, okay, the Ravens are out. But that was the old way of thinking in college football. But last year we watched Ohio State lose at Oregon in the 6th game of the year and then lose against Michigan at home in the rivalry week, final season of the regular season, didn't even play in the conference championship game. And then they just regrouped, took the extra time off, and just blitzed through the playoff and won it all. It is a different mentality. Oregon learned that a year ago. Let's go to Chris. Chris, welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hey, John. Good to see you. Excited, awesome. I'm glad you were walking around.
Yeah, appreciate you, man.
Yeah, I'm excited for the Ducks, man. Long time Duck fan. I've been watching these guys this year, and yeah, they might have had a kind of a down game last two games, but you know they played well at Oregon State. There were a lot of missed passes and stuff that went with that, but I feel real confident with the Ducks, their defense, their DBs, their receivers, their running game, more at the quarterback. So, you know, it's going to be a great test. And I honestly think the Ducks will stand up and show them what they can do. So, you know, if they lose, then we move on from that. But I feel real confident with the Ducks this year.
Yeah, I believe I was walking through the parking lot at Utz and you caught me from behind. You ran me down. I appreciate that. It was good to meet you, man. Thanks for saying hi.
No problem, man. I was like, yeah, there's John. So yeah, I knew you were doing interviews, but yeah, it was a really nice day for a game. And I think that, you know, the sportsmanship between the teams of that game was a lot more reasonable than a lot of the other Civil Wars. And, you know, I hope Oregon State kind of, you know, can do a comeback on what they're doing. And, you know, all I can say is go Ducks.
Yeah. Look, and there was something too about the Civil War. Like, yeah, the competition wasn't on the level, but I looked around. There were a lot of families there. There were a lot of kids there. There were a lot of people tailgating. I saw a Duck fan and Beaver fan sitting together at the game. I saw early in that game, a closer than expected game until Oregon kind of put its foot down and said, okay, we're going. So I didn't want to throw the whole game out. It didn't feel like a normal rivalry game for the second year in a row. It's happening at the wrong time of the year. It's too sunny and warm. But other than that, I mean, thought it was a really nice day of football, college football at Autzen Stadium. And, you know, still some bad feelings swirling around, of course, especially from the Oregon State side. But I think there are a lot of Duck fans out there, too, that go, hey, the Pac-12 never should have blown up. That if USC and UCLA don't leave, the Pac-12 pulls together, gets a $50 million per school media rights distribution, and Oregon and USC and Washington and Utah, you know, are still kind of playing, and Jonathan Smith never leaves Oregon State. Like, there's a lot of things that just happened. There were a lot of dominoes that fell. And in the end, I am hopeful in 5 or 6 years that some semblance of sanity wins out and that the revenue sharing, like it's not, because even in major college football right now, it's not like the Power Four has split away. No, no, no. There is a faction of schools in the Big Ten and the SEC that have split away from the Power Four. Oregon and Ohio State and Penn State and Georgia and some others have just kind of said, we're on another level within the level. And it's because of the revenue. You follow the money. Let's go to Gene. Gene, welcome to the show. What's on your mind, Gene?
Hey, John. Is this week a little different than the week before the Oregon-Montana State game as far as your show goes with the excitement and everything?
Yes.
That's why I called in. It's all about who we're playing all week before the game on Saturday. It means friends talking together. You're thinking about the game, and it's just exciting. It's a team that is certainly equal to what we are or better, and it doesn't get any better than the competition, and I'm excited about it. The thing that I think that Oregon, it's going to be tough, of course, but it's a night game, and I think that that's an advantage to Penn State. You might have already talked about that on your show, but other than that, hey, win or lose, what a great week of looking forward to the Oregon Ducks and the publicity they get on your show and other shows about, hey, Oregon and Penn State, we're there, baby. We're there. And I hope we win, but it's just better competition, better football games. That's what I wish for all of college football. I wish sometimes there was a different conference of only 20 elite teams that played each other.
I think it's going to that, Gene. I think ultimately the schools that have money will split away, and I think the schools that don't have money are going to go. Are going to get tired of getting their brains beat in, and they're going to go do something else as well. I've heard in group of six schools talk about, you know, should they just split off and do their own thing? And you get some support for that when you start to talk to the group that is like Tulsa and North Texas and maybe some of the Mountain West schools, and, you know, but by and large right now, the Pac-12 and the top of the American are all just sort of posturing. North Texas and Memphis and South Florida and Boise State and certainly Oregon State, Washington State, all were talking at the beginning of the year about wanting to finish at the top of their conferences and posture and position themselves for whatever comes next. Let's go to the phone lines. David is in Astoria. David, welcome from the coast.
Hey, John. Three things. First, the Platypus Trophy. I went down to Eugene to school in the late 60s and got to know some of the student government people because we're all doing anti-war work. But there were people who knew of the existence and apparently had seen that trophy, and it was apparently a little on the scruffy side, and there was a movement at that time to clean it up, spiff it up, and inject it back into the fabric of the Civil War. I wish they had done that, but they didn't pull it off, apparently, at the time. Second, in terms of the Civil War in general, I mean, it looks rather one-sided at the moment, but if you look, you know, I try and maintain a historical outlook, and that if you look back through time, I haven't done the actual research, but my memory says there have been a lot of times when it was lopsided and not always one way. I think DeAndros kind of kicked our tails for a string of time there, for instance. So I would say forget about how imbalanced it is. Let's just carry on. We've lost enough tradition. Let's hang on to that piece of it. Of course, I might feel a little bit differently if it was my Ducks setting up for a string of bashings. But
yeah, all right. So here's the thing. Like, yes, it's been cyclical. You can go back, you know, to the late 1800s, early 1900s. You can go back to, you know, the 1930s, the 1950s, the 1980s. You can find periods of time where the Beavers dominated for a decade, and then you can find other periods of time where the Ducks dominated for a decade. What's different about this is the money. Because back then you saw, okay, Oregon State made a good hire or had a good run of recruiting, and Oregon didn't, and one school was up, one school was down. You could see kind of the back and forth. And then there were other periods where both schools kind of had it together, right? I mean, there was just some great years, especially with Chip Kelly and Mike Riley or Dennis Erickson around, and you had teams that were playing for major stakes. But this is different. This is a systemic shift that has put Oregon State in a huge competitive disadvantage. It doesn't help that Jonathan Smith left in the middle of it. It doesn't help that the conference splintered. It doesn't help that revenue sharing came on at exactly the same time, because it has created this just chasm between the two schools. I think Oregon State can close some of it, but I don't know if they can close it all, especially if, you know, 5 years from now, the split is like 40 teams instead of 60 teams. It might not be a big enough net to capture where Oregon State sits. Like, Oregon State might be school number 48. And, you know, if they only take 40 or they only take 36, you're not going to be included. So Oregon State's got to go pedal to the metal. And there's a temptation here to think about Oregon, but Oregon's playing at the top. Oregon is a top five school when it comes to revenue and funding, okay? Oregon's not the school that Oregon State needs to catch. Oregon State needs to catch, you know, the schools that are at the bottom of the Power Four. It needs to catch Oklahoma State. You know, it needs to catch Vanderbilt. It needs to catch Purdue. Those are the schools that Oregon State needs to stay close to. And I think Oregon State needs to schedule some of those schools rather than Texas Tech and Oregon, who are playing at the top of the Power Four. More of your phone calls, 503-417-7575. How do you see the Ducks against Penn State? Also, what do you make of Oregon State's plight? I want more of your calls. We got Freddie in Central Point, who's going to be up next. Brad in Vancouver is holding as well. I got a couple lines open at 503-417-7575.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Think about what the Pac-12 schools fumbled away. Because Oregon's fine, right? Oregon's fine playing on the next level of college football. But think about the football on the West Coast. Utah got clobbered on Saturday by Texas Tech, as did Cal and Stanford. UCLA is in a mess. USC looks okay, to be determined. USC and Oregon look fine. Washington, I don't think Washington can ever play at the top of the Big Ten the way they were playing at the top of the Pac-12. But all those schools benefited from the fact that the legacy Pac-12 conference was a thing. They attracted the best talent in the western part of the United States. And Oregon State and Washington State and some other schools like, you know, Arizona and Utah could all get good players. Could all get good players, even in bad years, because they had that Pac-12 logo on their jerseys and on their field. That conference was a power and was a nice check and balance for the SEC and the Big Ten, because if the SEC and the Big Ten ever threatened to run away with it all, the Pac-12 and the ACC and the Big 12 could all just stand shoulder to shoulder and go, hey, we got you outvoted. That no longer exists. Carol Folt and USC should be ashamed of themselves. They ruined 108 years of history, just ruined it. Think about that every weekend when I see Cal and Stanford and Utah and Arizona State and Arizona, and I'm like, these schools should all still be playing in the same conference. It's a shame. It was a good football conference and gave the western part of the country a dog in the fight. Whether it was USC or Oregon or Washington playing in the playoff or contending or Utah, you had a dog in the fight. Not so sure that the western part of the United States is going to feel that way. I think Oregon fans will feel that way, or USC fans will feel that way in a given year, but their success is largely going to be trumpeted by a conference that's headquartered in Chicago. So it's not the same. 503-417-7575 is the number. Let's go to Freddie, who's calling in from Central Point. Freddie, welcome.
Hey, JC, great to talk to you. We just love your show here in Southern Oregon, so thank you.
Thank you, man.
But Yeah, I tell you, I'm just sick about what's happened to the Pac-12, in particular with Oregon State and Washington State. Just the rivalry alone with the Civil War, I remember going where it was 7 or 8 deep for standing room just to get a glimpse of Alex Molden picking off the ball. It was just great, great times, great tradition. But I tell you what, you know, you've said it before, it's all about revenue. It's all about the money, and it's so sad what's happened with college football. Scott Barnes, though, if he had the opportunity, he would have done the same thing. And I'll tell you another thing, this whole rap, I'm covering a few leaks of your callers, but all this Uncle Phil and just dogging Phil and Penny Knight, let me tell you, one thing I do have is I have perspective. And I remember my first Oregon game, 1968, and a rainy, blustery day, there was less than 10,000 fans there. And Oregon had the status for decades of being like a Wake Forest or a Northwestern. So, you know, I am just thrilled. I'm thrilled with Oregon. We're going to go to Beaver Stadium. My son and I are going this weekend. This is the bucket list. We're going to yell our heads off, even if we get clobbered. But, you know, these people that are dogging Oregon because of Phil and Penny and what they've done, hey, support your own university. The thing of it is, you look at USC used to roll us in the 70s, and then all you had on TV was Michigan, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Georgia, Air Parseghian, and all those people. You get behind the curtain, John. I don't know this for a fact, but I think something was going on back then financially. So all I've got to say is I'm thankful for Oregon. We're in the geographically challenged Pacific Northwest where we don't have rabid fans like the SEC South does. But, hey, we're excited. Go Ducks.
Yeah, look, and you're going to Penn State with a puncher's chance. Phil Knight's 87. That window won't be open forever. He's not getting around Autzen Stadium like he used to. I did not see him walking around the press box, hanging out, saying hi. You know, the last time I saw him, I think, was last football season, really. And I saw him at the Michigan game last year, Oregon-Michigan. And he was in good spirits, but he's 87. I mean, come on, you know, like, everything hurts, I imagine. You know, look, if you're Phil Knight, Penny Knight, no one should begrudge you for giving your money to your alma mater. But as Pat Kilkenny, the former Oregon AD, has said numerous times, you know, if it weren't for Phil and Penny, Oregon would have been in the same soup that Oregon State finds itself in. Would have been the same predicament. Market is the same. Media market is the same. The difference between Oregon State and Oregon is the brand and the marketing of Nike and the money from Phil and Penny Knight. That's it. That is the difference. The influence of Oregon and Nike walking hand in hand. I don't knock Phil Knight for that. In fact, when he put his, you know, they put his son's name, Matthew, on Matthew Knight Arena as a tribute to his late son, I wrote a column that said, you know, of course they should. He paid for the thing. And I got a note from Phil saying how much that meant to he and Penny. And I was like, no one should, like, nobody should be sitting back saying to anybody, how dare you give your money here or there? Give your money where you want to give your money. But there is an emphasis right now on Oregon State. If I am Scott Barnes, I'm over there with Jensen Huang, the founder of NVIDIA, and I'm going, hey, can I take you to a football game? Can I get you interested? You and your wife went to Oregon State. Like, look, you don't need a $500 million pledge to Oregon State football, but how about a $50 million pledge? Like, you get your donors excited about your football team and helping close the gap. That's how you do it. Brad's in Vancouver. Brad, what's up?
Hey, just want to say, I think you hit the nail right on the head when you're talking about, we don't know how good these teams are. I mean, okay, we know that Oregon is better than Oklahoma State right now, but are they as good as Penn State? No, we don't know that. I think it's a perfect reason why we shouldn't have rankings before 6 or 7 games are played. We have absolutely no clue. I remember seeing all the talking heads and all the articles talking about how Texas was going to destroy Ohio State. And then, you know, they play the game on the field, and turns out that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. We have no idea just how good Oregon is or is going to be. I mean, remember last year when they barely beat Idaho and the sky was falling, and they go undefeated. We have no clue.
Yeah, it is a great point. And we think they're good because they have the best recruiting classes. They have returning players that we trust. We think that they're good. But in the end, I am left kind of going, let's see it on the field. And Penn State is going to be mad. Penn State has to be mad. Penn State rushed for 300 yards against Oregon in the Big Ten championship game, outgained the Ducks, but had two interceptions. Why Penn State threw the ball 39 times in that game is beyond me. And I think everyone will look back at the Big Ten championship game and they'll say, oh, this Dylan Gabriel pass or this interception was the play of the game. I kind of think the play of the game was when Tyler Warren, the Penn State tight end, got hammered going down the sideline with like 5 minutes to go in the game. And I think he got a concussion and he kind of came to the sideline wobbly and he never was a factor in the game after that. I think if he's in the game, I think Oregon couldn't stop Penn State. Now, Penn State went out and hired Ohio State's defensive coordinator. Will he be a factor in this game? Hey, there's a lot up in the air Saturday. Punch and Audio is coming up. Leave it here.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Marcus Mariota a little emotional in the postgame against the Raiders. Two touchdowns, no interceptions, 41-24 win against the Raiders. Here's Marcus talking to Fox Sports.
First of all, God is good. I just, this means a lot to me. So it was awesome. It was such a good group of guys that were dedicated to doing their best and executing. And it was fun to be a part of today.
Obviously, it made you a little emotional there. Why?
A little bit. Just thinking about my journey. That's about it, you know. The ups and the downs, and I was a part of a great franchise with the Raiders, and to see some of these guys and to play against them, it was a lot of fun for me, and I'm just a part of such a great culture, and I'll never take that for granted, and I'm just truly blessed and truly appreciative of it.
A little emotional, Marcus Mariota, and for Duck fans, you know his journey. I always say to people, people ask me what this rivalry is like, Oregon and Oregon State, and I go, yeah, you know, the sides don't like each other. There's bad feelings. But I'll never forget, like, when Marcus Mariota won the Heisman Trophy, there were a lot of Oregon State fans who were going, you know, that's a Pacific Northwest guy. There wasn't the normal vitriol. He spanned some of that. We're going to play Punch and Audio in this segment. Coming up at 4:24, Zachary Neal, USA Today, Oregon Ducks beat writer, will be with us. Later this week, Trent Bray, Oregon State coach, will make his weekly appearance. We'll get a visit from Trent Walker, Oregon State wide receiver, on the show as well. Dan Lanning joining us Thursday at 4:20, I am told. Oregon setting Lanning up on this show. You know what I like? Lanning comes on every time there's a big game. He comes on when they're playing Penn State. He comes on when they're playing Ohio State. He comes on when the week before the Rose Bowl. He comes on before last year's Big Ten championship game. He tends to show up when they're playing a big game. He doesn't mind doing any interview in those weeks. And I think sometimes by Thursday, he's probably locked into you know, what's going on with the game plan. He's talked all about it. I kind of think he likes to step away from that. And, you know, on Thursdays is when he generally comes on the show. So landing on Thursday at 4:20, make an appointment there. Jerry DiNardo, whose wife started the whiteout at Penn State, or at least she's getting a lot of credit for it. Jerry DiNardo coming on the show later in the week. Big Ten Network analyst Jake Butt will be with us on the show as well. We got great guests this week. I will be in Happy Valley to cover Oregon and Penn State, so I'll have you covered at johnconzano.com as well. We're going to talk about a lot of things in Punch It Audio. We got great sound. Let's do it.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Well, let's start with baseball. Cal Raleigh, what a year. Home run number 58. Here's how it sounded.
Here's the pitch. Swing and a well-hit ball. Down the right field line. Stay fair. Goodbye, baseball. Holy smokes, he does it again. Number 58 for Cal Raleigh. Getting closer to the Bambino. Cal Raleigh with a two-run screaming line drive. He is rampaging through the record books here in 2025 and writes another chapter in a storybook season. Cal Raleigh with home run number 58 on the year, getting closer to Babe Ruth, getting closer to Maris, getting closer to Aaron Judge. Holy smokes, what a year for Cal Raleigh. And the Mariners now lead the Astros 7-0.
I'm going to start with the good stuff. Mariners with a three-game lead over the Astros in the American League West. They've won 9 out of 10, 4 in a row. Same time that the Houston Astros have been in a little bit of a funk, the Mariners have come on, and it's being led once again by Cal Raleigh, who's got 58 home runs, 121 RBIs. Great season, MVP season. And for people who say, oh, you know, Raleigh has been in the DH position 35 times this year, I would remind you that Aaron Judge has been in the DH position 56 times. Cal Raleigh's played 30 more games at catcher than Judge has played in right field. Aaron Judge having a great year. But this is your MVP, and the Mariners in the driver's seat right now in their division. Great, just a fantastic year for a player that had a reputation of being a great defensive player to go out and hit 58 home runs. Is nothing short of amazing. Cowboys lost at the Bears 31-14. They're 1-2. Jerry Jones says, hey, there's still a playoff caliber team. Do you believe him?
Is this a playoff caliber team?
The Cowboys?
Yes.
I'm going to tell you, yes. Yes. And that's because you saw number 4 out there today. And you saw what I think we're capable of doing in the running game and that type of deal. So, yes, I fully do. Now, we've got to, as we evolve toward the playoffs, we've got to get better defensively, certainly.
Dallas Cowboys are in trouble. They're 1-2. CeeDee Lamb now is going to miss some time with a high ankle sprain. They're talking could be 2 games, could be 3 or 4 weeks. They don't know. He just lost to the Bears, who looked like they were inept. You know, rookie guard Tyler Booker now out 4 to 6 weeks, high ankle sprain as well. This is a mess. And the Cowboys are, I guess, a great example of a once great franchise and a once great entity that lost their way at some point. And I think you have to kind of look. I always come back to Jerry Jones because I come back to leadership. This isn't about coaching. This isn't about a single an injury here or there. There are cases of injuries, of course. This is about a failure of leadership and ownership in Dallas. And unfortunately, you can't fire the owner. That's what it always comes back to. Eagles with a blocked field goal that they returned for a touchdown. What a game on Fox. Eagles-Rams.
Joshua Cardy.
A walk-off blocked field goal against the Rams. Jordan Davis. returned it 61 yards for a touchdown. Second block kick in the fourth quarter. Rams having some problems on special teams. Played a great first half, couldn't hold on. Meanwhile, Packers get upset by the Browns, 13-10. Here's how it sounded.
Good snap. Good hold. The kick is on the way. The kick is good! The kick is good! And Andre Schmidt from 55 to give the Browns a 13-10 win!
This is a bad loss for Matt LaFleur. Just when you declare that the Packers are, man, they might go all the way. Browns with an improbable win. Stunning the Packers. Walk-off field goal. Massive upset. Jordan Love got sacked 5 times. You block a field goal attempt. Little things turn into big things. Eddie Pinheiro and the 49ers with a winning kick. Here's Eddie.
Before and win the game with his leg. Sweeps it. Delivers it. And San Francisco is in first place. They win it at the horn.
49ers with a win, but they lose Nick Bosa. Torn ACL. Big blow for the 49ers. Out for the season with a torn ACL against the Cardinals. It was all about the kicks in college football. The punts, the kicks. Indiana, Illinois. Indiana crushed Illinois 63-10.
Second punt for Clemens. It's blocked. Got in there and a beat. D'Angelo Pons is going to score. Touchdown Hoosiers.
Hoosiers won the second half 28-0. Ran away 63-10. The game that a lot of people thought Illinois could hang around in. Number 19, Indiana, rolling number 9, Illinois, 63-10. Trent Bray, coach at Oregon State, talking about the run game in his Monday press conference. Beavers looked okay in the first quarter running the football against Oregon. Didn't manage much after that.
No, there's no question. We got to run the ball better. And there were moments on Saturday against a really good front. We got to build on that. But we got to be more consistent with being able to run the ball, because once, you know, they kind of shut that off for us, it made it really difficult the rest of the game.
Yeah, they shut that off. But Oregon State had a little going in the run game in the first quarter. Didn't statistically end up looking like they ran the ball very well. But that's what was working for the Beavers early. Can they sustain the run game against the likes of Houston and Appalachian State and Wake Forest and Lafayette and Tulsa? That becomes the question down the stretch for the Beavers. Meanwhile, Dan Lanning with some thoughts on the Penn State game.
Yeah, they're really talented. Schematically, as challenging as anybody will play, right, as far as what they present on both sides of the ball. They play relentless effort. They play well on special teams. You know, Coach Franklin's teams are always well coached, so it will be a real challenge for us, but one we're excited to attack.
The biggest factor in this game is going to be the run game of Penn State against the rushing defense at Oregon. That's it. That's the ball game. Penn State ran wild against Oregon in the Big Ten championship game. Had they not turned the ball over twice on interceptions, I think Penn State probably wins that game. And maybe it ends up better for Oregon, because Oregon doesn't get that first round bye and have to wait for 25 days to play in the Rose Bowl. Maybe it would have been a silver lining losing that Big Ten championship game. Penn State is going to try to run the ball again. I don't think you're going to see 39 pass attempts from the Nittany Lions in this game as you did in the Big Ten championship game. And you got the whole wide-out crowd as James Franklin trying to get his fans fired up. It is a quick turnaround, though, and Dan Lanning talked about it.
Yeah, one game at a time. We had to focus on this game this week. I know they have a bye this week, so they were able to focus on us, but our focus was on Oregon State. But that's why we got to be able to flip the switch quick and move on and get ready for Penn State.
Yes, he mentioned the bye. I think 7 of Oregon's opponents have more preparation time than the Ducks in front of their games with Oregon this season. Pablo Torre's done a lot of good reporting on the Clippers fiasco and Kawhi Leonard. He thinks this is Adam Silver's biggest test. Here's Pablo.
I believe this is the biggest test of Adam Silver's tenure as commissioner. And I say that knowing that there are other candidates
but he came in with Donald Sterling. That was, in retrospect, an easy call. Documentary evidence, a tape. In 3 days, they said, banned for life. This, poetically almost bookending that, Ballmer coming in because of that, Ballmer now being at the heart of a story, Tony, in which he poured in $118 million over 18 months, tracking alongside secret payments no one knew about to Kawhi Leonard, that total $28 million in a no-show endorsement contract and $20 million more in a stock deal that he was signed to. We're talking about $48 million outside of the cap, paid by the richest owner in all of sports. And so the question for Adam Silver, to be blunt about this, is do the rules matter?
His legacy is at stake in this. A whole bunch of other owners in the NBA, five or six super influential owners, all going to be looking at Adam Silver going, what gives, man? This is your legacy. The same way David Stern's legacy included ripping the Sonics out of Seattle, the same way it included the Tim Donaghy scandal, the same way it included, hey, Magic and Larry and how it raised the profile of the NBA and resulted in all this TV money being infused into the pockets of the owners, Adam Silver's legacy is wrapped up in this Kawhi Leonard no-show job scandal. The entire league is watching this. NBA executives are all looking at the Clippers going, did they just circumvent the salary cap? You can't play outside the rules. We have rules in sports for a reason. And I think the owners in the league are concerned that if this ends up being, you know, $48 million that got paid outside of the salary cap by the richest owner in sports, as Pablo points out, like, this is going to be bad for Silver. I think it's why Silver hasn't been silent. He's come out and tried to calm down the situation, but every time he comes out and talks, something else gets reported. There's a drip, drip, drip of the faucet. You have a leaky faucet in your bathroom? You ever been around a leaking faucet that needs a plumbing fix? There's a drip, drip, drip that doesn't go away until you deal with it. Now, Silver's legacy, part of this is going to be, you know, how complicit was the league itself in allowing a wealthy owner to circumvent the cap, if that's what happened? And then secondarily, what is Silver going to do about it? Will he come in and will he act harshly? And will it be a swift and harsh, you know, you tell me. It's going to be wild to watch that go down. That is Punch It Audio. Appreciate all those great clips. Great stuff, you know, ranging from baseball to basketball to college football, the NFL. So much going on right now. It's such a I love this time of year. There's a lot to talk about. I touched on the Mariners and their run. And Mariners fans got a taste of the baseball postseason in the last few years, right? You got a taste of it. It was fun. They didn't really participate in this thing. The watching the Mariners catch the Astros, and not just catch them, blow by them with, you know, the last 12 or 13 games in the season, the Mariners have just been absolutely on fire, and they have created some distance between themselves and the Astros. Meanwhile, I'm watching the wild card standings, and I'm going, okay, right now you got, you know, your division leaders in the American League, your Blue Jays, your Mariners, your Tigers. Then you start looking at the wild card race, Yankees, Red Sox, Guardians, the Astros in a precarious position. They're still in front of the Texas Rangers and the Kansas City Royals, but I'm watching the Astros going, are they going to play themselves out of the wild card situation, or what is going to happen, you know, if they continue to be on this tailspin? The problem is that the Rangers have lost seven in a row, and they are sitting there, and the teams that are sitting right on that line, the Astros have lost three in a row, the Rangers have lost seven in a row. Of course, that's what happens with the wild card. Now, these wild card teams that win the wild card are always dangerous because they play their way into the playoffs, and so much of baseball is your momentum and your ability to capture momentum. But the way that the Seattle Mariners are playing right now, I have watched them go from, hey, can they get a wild card, to they're going to win the American League West, to could they win the American League, to could we see the Mariners in a competitive situation in a World Series? There are a lot of people in baseball that are looking at the Mariners pitching. They're looking at the way Kyle Raleigh's hitting, and they're going, like, that would be a really fun team to see play deep into the playoffs. So I'm looking at the Mariners now going, hey, this might not just be a cute little story in Seattle. This is a team that actually is going to contend in the American League, and I'm fascinated to see, like, you know, you always have to worry about the Yankees. Yeah, you have to worry about the Red Sox. Of course, you know, for a stretch, you know, the Blue Jays and the Tigers have both had their moments, but I feel like the American League is pretty wide open right now, and I didn't feel that way maybe before some moves were made. And so, you know, remember how mad fans were with Jerry? They were so angry with Jerry DePoto, the general manager of the Mariners, just, you know, in the last two seasons. And his comment at the end of the season after they were knocked out about how, you know, you're just trying to win a certain percentage of the games. And it was just such a defeatist mentality. And he just got hammered by media in Seattle, and he got hammered by fans. And I think that that reaction from fans and media caused the Mariners to go out and do some things as they were trying to better the roster and trying to get in position to make some moves. Like, you know, this is a really good team. It's got good pitching. And it's got a player that's having MVP season. And I don't know how. I guess I do know how. New York, Aaron Judge. I do know how other people come out and say, well, this is a race for the American League most valuable player. Like, to me, Cal Raleigh's the most valuable player in the American League. Like, there's not a player that's more valuable to his team than Raleigh. You look at the numbers he's put up. You look at how this team struggled to hit, struck out too much in the last two seasons, couldn't score runs. Look at their pitching. I kept saying, gosh, they have great pitching if they could ever get the hitting together. And Cal Raleigh has this amazing year. He is the most valuable player in the American League. I don't know how anybody could see it any other way. All right, leave it here. We're going to talk about the Ducks going to Penn State. They're going to State College, PA. Here to talk about it, Zachary Neal, USA Today, Oregon Ducks beat. He's up next.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Yeah, as a whole team, it was, you know, rivalry week, and state rival, playing for the community, playing for Phil. So it was a lot of it that played a part. But personally, it was me remembering my 18-year-old self when I played at Oregon State, and I was mentally depressed, just the way, you know, things are going, and everybody knows the struggles that have happened, and I kind of just use that as fuel to make sure that I never get that feeling ever again. So this week I just pushed myself. Coach Lanning, me and him watched my UCLA game, and we were kind of going through, like, if I had to call a play here, will it be different? And a lot of plays were just different, but he just kind of told me that that's probably the best thing I've gone to is just improving, you know, making smarter decisions, you know, putting the ball where it needs to go. So there's a lot of juice that was just, you know, flying around for this game. And, of course, I got emotional when I was praying before I took the field. And it was just great to get the win, for sure.
There's Dante Moore, Oregon quarterback, getting emotional at the game. Football's a game of emotion. We should all be fired up. You know, like, it's for you and me. Maybe it's a diversion for these players. You heard Marcus Mariota getting emotional. Does Zachary Neal get emotional with games? Does he know how good he has it? He covers the Ducks. USA Today, Oregon Ducks beat. Zachary Neal joining us now. You don't get emotional, but do you have an appreciation that you are not holding a jackhammer for a living?
Oh, man, I definitely have an appreciation for that. I do sometimes get emotional. You know, you're not supposed to when you're on the job, but sometimes it's hard. I remember back at the 2021 at the Ohio State game after Oregon pulled off that incredible upset. I kind of just sat by myself on the bench after the game, after interviews, and was like, wow, this is, you know, this is my job. This is an amazing, amazing thing to do. So, yeah, it's not lost on me for sure.
Yeah, you're sitting up in the press box. Let's not lie. You got a nice, cushy chair. You got a view. They're handing you stats. You're eating cookies and brownies. I don't know. I walked past them. But most of the media members are up there eating cookies or brownies during the game. You're not holding a jackhammer. I'm just saying. This week, they'll go to Penn State. Oregon will go to Penn State. I'll be at the game. I'm assuming you'll be at the game. What are you expecting? What are you expecting at Beaver Stadium?
I expect to learn a lot. I think that, like, I am expecting a good game. I think these are two really good teams. I think they match up pretty well against each other. There are some matchups that will be interesting to watch. But without either of these teams really playing anyone yet, I mean, you kind of say the preseason is over now. Now you're finally getting into the real conference play. I think we'll just learn so much about who these teams are. I can't wait to see how Dante Moore handles the pressure, handles 106,000 people screaming in his ear while he tries to operate the offense. I want to see what Oregon's run defense looks like this year against a really good team. So I think the most thing is we'll finally walk away from this game and say, all right, I have a better sense of who Oregon is. Because up to this point, we have an idea, but not against good teams.
The defense at Oregon has had some moments where I go, I don't think they're going to stop Penn State. Like, for a spell, Northwestern ran the ball on them. Oregon State started off running the ball. But I feel like I'm nitpicking, Zachary, because I'm looking at it going, at the end of the game, I go, you know, Oregon State really didn't rush for any yards on them, but it just felt like they did. Is this a big question for Tosh Lapoy and the defense? Can they stop Penn State run game, or do you feel like it's a little unfair to say that and before we've seen it?
I think if it was a one-off, it would be a little bit unfair. But at this point, we've got a little bit of a track record of Oregon's rushing defense not being perfect at all times. I mean, look at Penn State last year when they ran for 297 yards in the Big Ten Championship. Look what Ohio State did in the Rose Bowl. Yes, they looked great against Montana State and Oklahoma State. I think most teams would. Northwestern, in the fourth quarter, they gave up a lot of yards, a 79-yard touchdown, and then the first quarter against Oregon State, you know, it was a little bit more porous than you'd hope it would be. But outside of that, they've been really solid. Again, back to my original point, I think we're going to learn pretty quickly how good their interior run defense is, how good those edges are at setting the edge. Because Penn State's got two NFL-caliber running backs. You know, they've got the ability to run the ball really well. I think they'll hold up decently well. I think that's the number one key to the game, is making Drew Aller beat you and not let them run the ball down your throats. But I don't know. That's definitely the number one thing I'm looking at on Saturday.
We're talking to Zachary Neal. He eats cookies and brownies and covers college football for a living. He's got a pretty good job. He'll be at the Penn State game. I will as well. Jim Knowles, the former D coordinator at Ohio State, will be there as well. He has jumped ship, and he is now the Penn State D coordinator. He is game planned against Will Stein. Will Stein had some success against him in the first meeting, not so much in the second meeting. Is that enough of a sample size, or was that Rose Bowl game that was such a downer? Do you throw that one out, or are you concerned that Knowles has figured something out about Will Stein?
I think he figured some things out, but that doesn't mean that Will Stein doesn't have another trick up his sleeve. I mean, it's kind of that, you know, ongoing chess match of, you make this move, I'm going to make this counter move. And, you know, coaches love to do that. So there were a lot of factors in that Rose Bowl game. I think talent was a factor. I think, you know, time off and the rest and the bye was a factor. I think that, you know, Ohio State just had a really, really good game plan for Oregon, and they caught them slipping a little bit. I'm curious to see what, you know, Penn State's defense looks like with Jim Knowles this year. If I remember correctly, his first year at Ohio State, they did not have, you know, the amazing championship-level defense. It kind of took them a little bit, a year or two, to get things going. So I don't know if that'll be the case this year. Again, we, you know, from what we've seen so far, you can't really take anything from that. So I love what I've seen from Will Stein so far this year. The scheme that he's got at Oregon, the number of different packages and you know, everything that they can do with their different formations is really impressive. I think they've put a ton on tape and kind of said, hey, Penn State, look what we can do. Have fun preparing for all of this. But, you know, Jim Knowles is the highest paid coordinator in college football, so I think that he will be ready as well.
Zachary Neal, USA Today, covers the Oregon Ducks, is with us. The both of these teams, Penn State and Oregon, played fairly vanilla. I mean, I know Oregon let its Aussie kicker run on a fake punt and did some things, right? It wasn't totally boring, but they played it pretty straight. Which of these teams do you think has more in the bag on the offensive side that they haven't shown?
I think Oregon, for sure. I mean, I've said this before. I'm not totally sold on Drew Aller yet. I mean, I think he's a very solid quarterback. He can win you some games. I don't know if he can be the sole reason that you won games. I think that they rely on their rushing offense so much. And they should, too. They've got a great offensive line and two incredible running backs. I think with the talent that Oregon has, both at quarterback, running back, wide receiver, the offensive line, I think, is very solid this year. And then what they have up their sleeve with Will Stein, too, and the dynamicism that he can bring to the table. I can't wait to see what the Ducks do and how many tricks they pull out of their sleeve this week. Because, like I said, they've been running this 11, 12, 13, 14 personnel this year, kind of just setting the table for what they can do. And when they go into those, different offset formations, they don't run anything insane. It's inside zone, outside zone, gas schemes. But what can they do with that? What are they able to do when you've got these mismatch personnel matchups?
I am looking at the pressure of this game. On one hand, Oregon learned a year ago, you don't have to win them all. You just need to win at the end of the season and win enough in the regular season. Ohio State taught us that. When you look at Penn State, though, I think it would be a bit of a backbreaker to lose the Big Ten title game, not get to the college football playoff title game, get knocked out in a big game, and then come back in this one at home in a game everyone thinks you should win and lose again. Zachary, talk me out of this. Is there more pressure on Penn State in this game than Oregon?
Oh, I can't talk you out of that at all. The pressure is squarely on Penn State here. I think Oregon is in a good position going into this because not many people outside of the state of Oregon or outside of Eugene really expect them to win. I mean, you look at the national media and Penn State is the number three team in the nation. They're playing at home in a whiteout. They've got everyone returning from last year's team pretty much. This is a game that they should and need to win. James Franklin, we know his record against top teams. I think he's 1-10 against top 10 teams in his career. It's just this is a game that he cannot lose if he wants to avoid questions. And it's not like they're going to fire him. He's a great coach. He's a good recruiter. He's got a great thing going in that program. But, like you said, the pressure is squarely on Penn State this year. I think that if Oregon can go in and win on the road in that environment with all that they have new this year, returning four starters from last year, that would be such a big win for Lanning and just such a big feather in his cap.
Zachary, do you have a game prediction yet?
Not a solid one. I've gone back and forth. I think that Oregon is going to win a close one. I'm not sure I feel 100% about that yet.
I am looking at it. If I had to pick it today, I think I'd pick Penn State. But I also think that's not going to matter as much because I look back to last year, Zachary, and I go, hey, what mattered last season is, what Ohio State did in the playoff. And maybe it's good if Oregon doesn't get to the conference championship game. Maybe it's good to be the 5 seed or the 6 seed or the 7 seed. I don't know. Do you feel like that logic holds up with Dan Lanning? And then beyond that, Zachary, I'm going to ask you a question here. And a reader of mine asked me this. Are they mean enough? Is Oregon mean enough to win at all? Because they have this nice guy, Dante Moore, sort of shine to them this season. And maybe that existed with Bo Nix and Dylan Gabriel. I never felt that way about Ohio State last year, and I didn't feel that way about Michigan 2 years ago. They were villains.
Yeah, I saw that question in your mailbag earlier. That was funny. To start, I would say maybe you would need to talk me off that ledge. I almost think that, if Oregon loses this game, it's not a bad thing because, we know what that pressure was like last year of them being number one for so long. And, no matter what the coach or players are going to say, the pressure can get to you and it builds you up a little bit. So if Oregon can fly through the season as, a fringe top 10 team and maybe get into that playoff at the lower seed, I don't hate that. I really don't. As far as them being mean enough, that's a good question. I think that there are certain players that have that fire. I think of Alex Turkey, the right tackle, who is a self-described bully on the field. I watched him kind of put an Oregon State player in a headlock on Saturday and throw him to the ground afterwards, which was pretty funny. I think there are some players that have that. But, overall, I don't know, the team follows the coach. And I think Dan Lanning's got a little bit of nastiness to him when he feels like it. Would you agree?
I think he does, and I think he's seen it kind of rear the vein in his neck gets going. I don't know. I've got him on the show on Thursday. I'll ask him on Thursday, are you mean enough? Are your guys mean enough to win it all? Because you need some mean guys to win big.
Yeah,
Zachary Neal, good follow on Twitter. I'll see you in the press box at Beaver Stadium in Pennsylvania on Saturday. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks, John.
There he goes. Zachary Neal, good stuff. Are they mean enough? I'll tell you who is mean enough. The streets of Portland. I had a good friend of mine from years ago in the newspaper business who reached out to me. He said, I'm visiting Portland. I put this on social media, and it caused a bunch of people to argue in the replies, which I guess is just the definition of social media. But this former newspaper colleague of mine coming to Portland, bringing his bicycle. He's driving. He's doing this tour. He said it's his long-lost friend tour. I sat down with him on Friday night and hung out with him for a bit. It was either Thursday night or Friday night. Maybe it was Thursday night. And hung out with him for just a bit. And he said he was staying downtown, decent hotel. He had his truck with him. He had his bicycle in the back of his truck. He had his camper shell on his truck. And he's like, I'm riding. He rode all over Portland. Said it's a great town to ride a bike in. And I said, yeah, but the downtown is still kind of sketchy. And lo and behold, Friday night, what do you think happened? He's parked outside his hotel in downtown Portland, smashed his windows, smashed his camper shell up. They stole his bike. They ripped through his glove box in his car and took everything out. Anybody who's been downtown knows I go to Moda Center. What do? I'm all the way back when I'm walking back to the car going, hope the car didn't get broken into. You park and you have dinner. Hope the car didn't get broken into. It's just over and over and over again. And I was even down in southeast Portland the other night, and I took my, I have my laptop with my backpack in there. I said, I'll just take it with me. Not leaving anything in the car. No valuables in the car. And yes, I know. Somebody in the comments even said it was my fault for not warning him. No, you should be able to park your car on the street in downtown Portland with a reasonable expectation that somebody's not going to smash your windows up and steal your bicycle, especially if you're visiting. But I felt bad. I was embarrassed. I told the guy, I'm so sorry. I should have told you. He says, I should have valet parked the car. Should have paid the extra money. I go, yeah, but you also should be able to park on the street in downtown Portland. And this happens. One time I had my windows smashed in. I was doing KGW Sports Sunday. It was on air. Parked in the KGW parking lot. I come out. First thing I see on the ground is my garage door opener. And I went, oh, crap. Saw my garage door opener on the pavement, and I picked it up. And then I looked up, and all four of my car doors, my truck, all four doors are open. Windows are smashed in. They ransacked through it. You know what really pissed me off? I had a young kid at the time, my youngest daughter. She liked to play with Play-Doh. She had a little can of Play-Doh in the back seat. Whoever ripped through the car took the Play-Doh out of the Play-Doh container and threw it on the ground. Like, to me, that was the ultimate offense. Like, smashing my windows, getting in my glove box, all that. What really pissed me off was you mess with my kid's Play-Doh. It's embarrassing. I wish it were a safer city. I wish I could tell people, come visit. Your car's not going to get broken into. But what happens is somebody comes and visits, and you know this is not that uncommon. And, yes, I know it happens in a lot of cities. Don't at me. But it shouldn't happen with the frequency that it does happen in downtown Portland. And it shouldn't happen with the blessing of law enforcement and city leaders. It just shouldn't happen. It's not the kind of place where a lot of people who live here feel good about visiting. For crying out loud, we are supposed to be a destination. This time of year, it's a beautiful time of year to visit Oregon. It's a beautiful time of year to come look at a downtown. I've often said Portland's a great place to raise kids, to fall in love, to pay taxes. Portland's it's a lovely city. In recent years, I've been like, well, more of the suburbs, not downtown per se. There's certain pockets there where, like, you park your car, you might as well leave your windows rolled down. But that's what it's coming to. And forgive me for ranting, but I bet you know somebody, if it hasn't happened to yourself, who has had their windows smashed and their belongings taken out of their car when they visited downtown Portland. I will bet you, this isn't the Kevin Bacon game. I think there's probably one degree of separation from a broken window in all of us. I've had it happen to me, had it happen to another person I know when they were at a game at Moda Center, just had it happen to a friend of mine who said, hey, I wanted to come see Portland. He drove to Bend. He said, wow, what a great place Bend is. Everybody looks so healthy. Everybody's on a bicycle. Awesome. Then he came to Portland, and he's like, wow, I rode my bike all around town. Really cool. I'm staying downtown. Went to Powell's Books. Amazing experience. Then what else happened? His car got ransacked. His windows got broken. He had to find on a Saturday an on-the-fly window repair crew that would come out and fix it. And in the end, I'm just embarrassed. Are you embarrassed? Is City Hall embarrassed? Are law enforcement officers embarrassed? Will anybody do something to make it just a little better? I don't expect it not to happen to anybody, but it shouldn't happen with the frequency that it does, to the point where when it does happen to my friend, I go, yeah, I should have told him. Why? Because I kind of expected it in the end. Maybe it is my fault. Leave it here. You got the BFT.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750, The Game.
Tremendous challenge, tremendous opportunity. You know, obviously, we need this place rocking. Need to have a distinct home field advantage. We always do. But I'm expecting this to be an environment like no one has ever seen. Urban Meyer always has kind of discussions and debates on what's the hardest place to play in college football. I think he usually says, you know, between Penn State Whiteout at night and LSU night game. So we want to make it clearly obvious to everybody what is the most challenging and difficult environment to play in all of sports, let alone college football. I know a good portion of our fans like to sit down except for third downs and red zone and what they consider critical times of the game. But I'm challenging everybody. This is a four-quarter, one play at a time, first, second down, third down, fourth down, punts, kickoff coverage, that we need to be on our feet screaming a collective battle cry in the stadium. So we're going to need everybody's help.
That's James Franklin, the Penn State coach, whipping his fan base into a frenzy. Now, instead of just saying, like, he's kind of a man of many words. I think there was an easier way to say all that. I mean, he was like on first down, on second down, on third down, on kickoffs, on punts. He could just say, hey, we need everybody on their feet for everything. All inclusive. Like, you know, I get the impression he's not a wholesale shopper. Like, he's not at the Costco buying everything in bulk. James Franklin talking it through. Here's the thing. I also think it's a little obnoxious, and maybe you feel this way too. Like, you know, I remember when Ohio State came to Autzen Stadium last season, and the Ohio State contingent was like, wow, that was the loudest place I ever heard. And I can remember the Columbus Dispatch beat reporter who covered Ohio State. He came on the show and he said it was the loudest environment he'd ever heard. And they were surprised by it. The schools in the western part of the United States, like Rice-Eccles Stadium in Salt Lake City, Utah, Autzen Stadium at Oregon, they get a bad rap. They don't get the credit. Everybody always looks at the Big Ten and they go, okay, it's in numbers. It's 100,000 fans that are, you know, in the stadium in Columbus, or it's 100,000 fans that are, you know, in the stadium at College Station, and it's, everybody's always looking at that going, that those are the loudest environments, or the SEC's loudest environments. Yeah, there's something to the acoustics in these stadiums that a place like Autzen Stadium can sound much, much louder and play bigger. And it is something I have wondered about as Oregon. Certainly, I rode the elevator with John Carl Schultz, the president at Oregon, on Saturday before the game. I got to the stadium and I got in the elevator. He and I had spent some time together last year, and so I shook his hand and we got in the elevator and we're talking about, you know, he was telling me about, he said, did you see the Wisconsin score? And I'm like, no, I don't really care about Wisconsin. I'm not watching that score. But he does, because he was a Wisconsin guy. And I said, you know, Wisconsin's coming to Autzen Stadium. I wonder if the Badgers, when they come to Autzen Stadium, are going to be ready for this environment. He's still fairly new at Oregon. And he kind of looked at me funny, like, you know, well, that's the Big Ten. And this is, you know, these stadiums are not as big out here. But I have covered college football for, what, 25, 30 years? I've been to Tallahassee, Florida. I've been to a game at LSU. I've been all around the western part of the United States. I covered Purdue and Indiana in the Big Ten. I've been to a football game at Notre Dame. I've been to Columbus three or four times. I've been to Michigan a few times. The number of fans inside the stadium in Ann Arbor, Michigan, or Columbus, Ohio, far greater than Autzen Stadium. Not louder than Autzen Stadium. Now, I would, to the point where I wouldn't be surprised if somebody told me someday, hey, you know what? They were piping sound into Autzen Stadium. I'm not accusing Oregon of that, but that's how loud it is. And it has something to do with the way that the stadium is set up and the way that the sound bounces around the stadium, the inside of the stadium. There is great acoustics in that room. I am a radio guy. I deal in sound. When I set up Studio X, where I do this show from, I talk to people who are engineers and audio experts, and they will tell me about ceiling height and angles in the room and how big the room should be and should it be a rectangular room or a square room or what you need to have on the walls to kind of make it a better sound environment so it sounds better on air. And there's a science to this. There is literally a science to it. I do worry that Oregon will be tempted to expand Autzen Stadium. They certainly will. They're selling out. There's money left on the table. Rob Mullins, the decision makers at Oregon, John Carl Schultz, the president of the university, even said it to me last year when we had our one-on-one conversation. He was like, you know, that's something we're really going to need to study. You know, is there more opportunity given that you're selling out when Ohio State comes to town or whatever? So if Oregon continues to sell out season tickets, the Ducks are going to expand Autzen Stadium. They are. At some point, they're going to go, hey, we need 5,000 more seats, or we need more luxury suites, or we need to have more premium seating in general, and let's beef this up. But in doing so, the key will be do not change the acoustics in the building. Don't F with the acoustics in the building, because you have this wonderful environment that is incredibly hostile, that you can't get over the way that it sounds, that it plays almost twice as big as it is when you're in it. Like, the sound of the Autzen Stadium sounds like there's 75 or 80,000 people in it, and there's not. And so when you add 7,000 more seats, do you lose something? That will be the key. And I don't know if you can hold on to the charm of it and you can avoid not having traffic nightmares and you can expand and add more seats without losing some of that. It's going to be a very tricky thing when Oregon approaches that. All right, coming up, I've got the 5 at 5. We're going to lead you right into Monday Night Football. You got the bald-faced truth. Leave it here.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Well, we're going to take you right into Monday Night Football. Detroit at Baltimore. Monday Night Football coming up right here on 750 The Game. We got great shows all week long. Dan Lanning will be joining us on Thursday. Oregon coach Trent Bray will be with us on Wednesday. Oregon State coach. We'll take a deep dive on Penn State with Jerry DiNardo and Jake Butt of the Big Ten Network later in the week as well. I will be in Happy Valley for the Oregon-Penn State game on Saturday. I'll have you covered at johncanzano.com. We'll have you all covered all over the social media accounts here at 750 The Game and my own on TikTok. Yeah, I'm on TikTok, at John Canzano. I'm on Instagram, at John Canzano. You can find me there as well. But before all that, we're going to dive deep with the five biggest stories in sports, and we've got some doozies today. Let's let it rip.
The 5 at 5. Number 1.
Well, some injuries in the NFL. I'm going to go first here with the NFL injury report. Nick Bosa, dominating defensive lineman for the 49ers, suffered a torn ACL in the team's game against Arizona over the weekend. He's going to require season-ending surgery. Big blow to the Niners, who have relied heavily on that defense. They found a way to win. but they'll have to find a way to win without Nick Bosa moving forward. Meanwhile, Cowboys first-round rookie guard Tyler Booker is out 4 to 6 weeks. High ankle sprain. Ian Rappaport reporting that today. He joins C.D. Lamb, who has an ankle ailment himself. Lamb expected to miss multiple weeks. Another injury in the NFL. Chargers losing Najee Harris, running back out for the season, according to Jim Harbaugh. That bug going around in NFL camps. Tough time of year. It's a violent game. How many backups started? Five backups? Quarterbacks started games over the weekend. We're getting to the backup defensive tackles and the backup offensive linemen and the backup running backs now.
Number two.
Are you ready for a wild final week in Major League Baseball? I'm focused on the Mariners, watching them in the American League West as they surged past the Astros to take the division lead, three-game lead. But another team I'm watching are the Guardians. The Guardians could very well pull off one of the biggest late-season comebacks in Major League Baseball history. On July the 8th, they were 15 and a half games behind the Tigers in the American League Central. They now stand one game behind the Tigers entering the final week of play. Cleveland has won 15 of 17. They have erased a 10.5 game deficit in the month of September. And get this, Guardians and Tigers play a three-game series in Cleveland starting tomorrow. If the Guardians can win just one of those three games, they will hold the tiebreaker advantage over the Tigers. That means that they win the division even if they end the season with the same record. Even if they lose, they're tied with the Astros for the final wild card spot, and they'd hold the tiebreaker edge over the Astros. Astros and Mariners neck and neck for weeks, but Seattle swept them over the weekend. Mariners now with a commanding, is it commanding? Three-game lead in the American League West, and they have the tiebreaker series as well. Going to be a big week in baseball is what I'm saying.
Number three.
Number six, Oregon, traveling to number three, Penn State. This is a rematch of the Big Ten championship game. Penn State, a slight favorite heading into the whiteout game. The Ducks are going to unveil a glow-in-the-dark mummy duck cleat against Penn State. I'm not that into the uniform combinations. You may know this. But James Franklin's press conference ahead of this Penn State-Oregon game turned into Franklin pleading for his fans to show up loud and proud. 106,000-plus expected at Beaver Stadium on Saturday in what should be a hostile environment. Big-time football game. It has put Georgia and Alabama, the usual big game this time of year, it has put that one in the back seat for me. Penn State, Oregon, both teams unproven. A lot of pressure on Penn State. James Franklin has not fared well in these big games. I think it would feel different if Oregon hadn't gone 13-0 last year and been the one seed in the playoff and beat Penn State, and if Dan Lanning hadn't won a couple of pivotal games, including the first game against Ohio State and the matchup with Penn State. A lot of us would be talking about Dan Lanning's inability to win big games, but instead, I think James Franklin's going to get that all week long. Can he win the big one? He's got a big one at home against the Ducks on Saturday.
Number four.
Let's go to college basketball. Bruce Pearl has stepped down as Auburn's basketball coach. 11 seasons. He's going to move into an ambassador role in the athletic department as a special assistant to the athletic director. Stephen Pearl, his son, has received a five-year contract as the program's new coach. This was a succession plan, was it not? This is like an HBO series or Netflix series, Succession. Bruce Pearl is 65. He took Auburn to the Final Four last year. Tigers were the number one overall seed in the tournament, won the SEC regular season championship, racked up 32 wins, fell to Florida in the national semifinal. Bruce Pearl, head coach at Auburn for 11 seasons, six NCAA tournament appearances, stepping down.
Number five.
Well, a 5-5 would not be complete without referencing Oregon State. The Beavers are sitting at 0-4. They have not caught lightning in a bottle this season. Trent Bray is Got a little bit of a warm seat. I don't know. Is it warm, really, though, if your athletic director, Scott Barnes, comes out and gives you a vote of confidence, knowing that you've got a job beyond week four, even though you're 0-4? Oregon State's strength of schedule this season, the metrics were quantified today. Oregon State is sitting with the number two schedule in America at this point of the season. They have played Cal. They have played Fresno State. They have played Texas Tech. They have played Oregon. It's possible that the Beavers have already faced two Power Four conference champions. And another team in Cal that looks like it could be a top 25 team if it stops losing to Mountain West teams. Trent Bray, he's got a big one on Friday night against Houston. Cougars are favored in that game on the road at Research Stadium. Oregon State has been a sloppy, disorganized mess, particularly at home. In two home losses, something's got to give on Friday night in a big game on ESPN. We'll talk to Bray on Wednesday's show, see what he has to say for himself. But Oregon State looking for its first victory of the season. Will the Beavers find it come Friday night? We shall see. That is the 5 at 5. Lions and Ravens coming up in about 7 minutes right here on 750 The Game. Baltimore, a 4.5-point favorite in this Monday night football game at home. And over-under in this game is 53.5. I'll have my weekly picks on Thursday. I always make my picks at johnconzano.com on Thursdays. I am currently, for the college football season, I think I'm 4 games over .500. Not good enough. I'm sitting at about 54% win percentage for the season. I like to be up around 58. 59, 60% on my picks against the spread. So I am not happy with my start this season. I've had two games, and this is like the ultimate, like, let me tell you about my fantasy league team moment. I've had two games this season where the hook, the half point got me. I'm 0-2 in those games. The half point got me on Fresno State, Hawaii on the late game on Saturday night as Fresno State eked out a 2-point victory. They were a 2.5-point favorite. I had picked Fresno State and laid the points. Cost me earlier in the season on a Utah game where I also laid the half point and got beat. So I'm not happy about losing those two games by half a point. But the sports book assures me that this will even out over time. I'm not so sure. It just tends to fall the opposite direction. All right. Make sure you grab a podcast of this show wherever you get a podcast. We do a great job of purposing the podcast of the show in real time and getting it set up for people that in a way that is palatable. The individual interviews all week long will be podcasted, as well as the show itself. You can share that podcast with friends and family. In fact, I encourage people to share the podcast with people, especially if you hear something like you hear Dan Lanning's interview with me on Thursday. You should go ahead and share that interview with friends. Or if you hear Trent Bray, oh, did you hear what Trent Bray said? You can just grab that podcast link and you can text it to a friend. It's so easy what we can do. We can often complain about technology and how our lives have become so complicated. You know, and I always think about this, like, you know, we always lament, like, oh, there's no break. The phone doesn't give us a break. We can't do this. And think about the positives, okay? Spin it a little bit positive. One of the positives of technology is you and I can hear a great interview on the show. And we can turn around and be like, hey, let me share that with somebody. I'm going to grab the podcast a few minutes after the interview's done when we post it. And I'm going to share that with, Joe McGee, my friend, who would ultimately love that. All right, leave it locked in right here on 750 The Game. Monday Night Football's ahead. We're back tomorrow with another great show.